This podcast was produced Wednesday, June 24th at 2:21 p.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like Governor DeWine will let us know the next time he spares the life of someone on Ohio's death row. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who say they are transparent until they aren't. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, the governor's race remains largely a mystery with just about 4 months to go before Election Day. But first, Governor DeWine and the death penalty. We talked about it last week on this podcast. And this week, we'll dig a little deeper into the reasons why the former tough-on-crime prosecutor now says Ohio should stop executing people. To recap, in the early 1980s, that tough-on-crime former prosecutor helped write Ohio's death penalty law. The new state senator at the time was Mike DeWine. As Ohio's attorney general, many years later, DeWine helped carry out 15 executions. Now, in his final days as governor, DeWine says Ohio should end capital punishment. His sole reason, it is not a deterrent to murder because it takes too long to execute someone. Now, at this point, DeWine's change in position seems little more than symbolic. Republican leaders in the legislature support the death penalty. There is no movement ready to put this on the ballot so voters can decide. So right now, the death penalty appears like it's here to stay. For deeper analysis, we turn to the WOSU-TV Columbus on the Record panel. This week, it's OSU political scientist Herb Asher, Republican strategist Terry Casey, and Ohio Public Radio Statehouse reporter Sarah Donaldson. Sarah Donaldson, the reason for his switch was very logical, very data-driven. He never said he was morally opposed to the death penalty. This was a prosecutor making this case, right?
Well, he was asked about his faith, and I think he talked about the fact that that deterrence aspect was the moral justification for him, and that no longer exists. So, it's interesting. This was a long time coming because although you pointed out that Governor DeWine in his prior positions was very supportive of the death penalty in the ways that he acted, as governor, he has delayed every scheduled execution since he took office in 2019. He's blamed a lot of that on the lack of accessibility to lethal injection drugs. However, prosecutors and other pro-death penalty folks like Representative Brian Stewart, he's a Republican, he's the one who was pushing that nitrogen gas bill. They've called it an excuse. So I think the writing was on the walls. I asked the governor about this in 2024, if he was going to make a comment on the death penalty, take a stronger stance. He said he'd have more to say after the budget. The budget passed in June 2025, and it's almost a whole year later. So he waited till his final months.
206 days, Herb. He's got 206 days left in his governorship. Why now, when he's really a lame duck? He's really a lame duck with a capital L. Why not do this right after he was elected with 65% of the vote his last time?
Because it would have been too controversial, and it would have interfered with other things on his agenda. So I think he wanted to finally make the statement on this. But the statement that was finally made, you know, if you look at it logically, what he's saying, if we could speed it up, I wouldn't be opposed to it. And that's not the position I really thought he was going to arrive at. I thought he'd be adding publicly a statement about his own personal beliefs and also the impracticality of a death penalty.
Terry.
But on the aspect of speeding it up, when the bill was originally written, Paul Pfeiffer, later Supreme Court Justice, was a key writer of it with Mike DeWine. They purposely built in a lot of safeguards, as after one of the shows with Benson Woolman, former head of the ACLU, he pointed out Ohio has a good law in making sure that people have adequate legal representation if you're accused of a death penalty type crime. So there are protections in there that both drag it out but lessen the impact. And I had a son in high school did a report on capital punishment, and he interviewed Mike Miller, then the county prosecutor. And Mike Miller was very honest in acknowledging that most criminals don't fear the death penalty because they think they're too smart and won't get caught. So there's tangles. And then Eve Stratton on the Ohio Supreme Court made the point to my son, it's a classic thing. Do you believe the Old Testament, or do you believe the New Testament with redemption versus an eye for an eye? So there's a lot of questions and divides.
If you recall, former Attorney General Jim Petro and his wife were very much involved in the Innocence Project, which was really looking at those cases where, in fact, an innocent person had been convicted and luckily had not yet been put to death.
Now, he didn't mention anything about wrongfully convicted people who have been on death row, who have had their cases thrown out, or they've been found innocent.
He did in passing, because it was a long press conference. He talked for almost...
This is the reason why I'm doing this is because it's not a deterrent. I wasn't very careful. He didn't talk about morality. He didn't talk about wrongful
conviction. But he did talk about the people who were involved.
He talked about the families.
He talked about the families, the victims' families who have said that they want that convicted person executed, as well as the victims' families who don't. He also pointed to the people who have to carry out the execution. So I think reading between the lines, which you often have to do with Mike DeWine, he did point to some moral issues that he has with it. But, of course, you know, it was a stark difference from, I asked U.S. Senator Bernie Moreno, who, of course, doesn't have a vote in the matter, but he's a Republican senator, top-ranking Republican official in Ohio, and he said plain out, God gets to decide who dies. He's also opposed to the death penalty. So I think although DeWine is coming out and saying this, and it doesn't seem like there's the support in the legislature, there are more Republicans who have come out in recent years against the death penalty.
Terry, if this were to go to a vote in the legislature, now Matt Huffman, the House Speaker, is not going to allow it to get to the floor. But if it got to the floor, would there be enough Republicans to join Democrats to abolish the death penalty?
Not today. Now, clearly there's been shifts, and there's some prominent Republicans on House and Senate who've shifted over the years, including a lot of strong right-to-life people who believe in life of both types. But clearly, times are changing and things have shifted. But if you talk to a Ron O'Brien, former Franklin County prosecutor, he'll tell you one of the biggest things, and I've done focus groups and heard people say it, they might be opposed to capital punishment, but there are certain heinous crimes, prison guards, police officers, young children raped and murdered, where people who oppose capital punishment would say, yes, but that deserves it. So there's a lot of shades of gray. It's clearly shifting, but the votes are not there today to repeal it.
The Attorney General, new Attorney General, appointed by Governor DeWine, he started just, what, 2 weeks ago, less than 2 weeks ago, Andy Wilson, kind of went against the governor, said, no, I support the death penalty. He says it's the, in a small percentage of cases, it's really the only way to give victims' families justice. Surprised by that stand he took?
No, actually, that's probably very close to what Terry just said. There are certain crimes that are so offensive, so heinous, that people would say, we need to have that as an option.
The next governor, assuming it's going to be either Vivek Ramaswamy or Amy Acton, Vivek Ramaswamy, same thing. In a small percentage of cases, he says we should have the death penalty, but he's not a huge fan, you can sort of tell. And Amy Acton is like, I'm going to keep the moratorium, and then we want to try to figure this out in the legislature. Again, riding the fence.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like in one camp or the other there is a solution about how to go forward, because if Governor DeWine is being as upfront as he says he's being, and Ohio has actually struggled to get these lethal injection drugs, is Vivek Ramaswamy going to work all that harder to get the drugs? And with Amy Acton's position, although I agree with Terry that I don't think, based on what I've talked to lawmakers about, that there are the votes in the House to pass a repeal, there are definitely not the votes to pass a nitrogen gas bill. And the only method on the books in Ohio right now is through lethal injection.
You know, what's amazing, though, is that having this discussion represents a major sea change from 20, 25 years ago, where, in fact, the whole notion of even raising the issue about abolishing the death penalty would have been almost out of bounds. How could you say that?
So there's two factors in the shift. One, Ohio law was changed to allow juries to choose life in prison without any chance of parole. So that shifted a lot of the convictions that might have gone death penalty. Now they pick the other option. And then the other thing is, in the last 25 years, DNA has come along, which has raised new questions and new safeguards in some ways against things. So there's a variety of factors involved.
Is this going to just fade away, the death penalty, Herb? I mean, there's 109 people, according to the Department of Corrections website, 109 people on death row.
They're getting older. Except for the state of Texas. You know, I think you're going to see in a lot of states that, in fact, the death penalty is not this kind of key issue that people had such great passions about in the past, on either side, for that matter. But here in Ohio, I think, you know, between the length of time it takes to execute the person and also the fact that a governor can commute. Plus, we also have all these other protections. you know, I don't think we're going to have a major
change. To that point, is there any chance Governor DeWine commutes some or all of those 109 cases now on death row?
I would say that's doubtfully going to change. And I think there's been some legal changes after Dick Celeste let a lot of murderers out when he was governor towards the tail end. So there's been some legal changes that limits a little bit. But again, the issue is changing and evolving, but can change quickly because we have some large mass murder, some big bombing, some other kind of things that'll rile up. And then also we forget in Ohio, there's gigantic differences of a Franklin County that's more urban college government employees versus a Hamilton County where you've got the southern influence of German Catholic. And that's why roughly a quarter of the people on death row are from Hamilton County with only 8% of the population.
But Sarah, if he wanted to commute or change the sentences, he could. I'm sure it's in his power. He could pardon. He's not going to do that. But he didn't want to talk about that in this news conference.
Yeah,
the governor.
He left the door open. He didn't shut the door on it, but he didn't say. He said he wanted to lay out his position and he wasn't going to talk about that today. So certainly left the door open. I think that there's a chance. I also think that there's a chance that he doesn't, that he wanted to put on the record, this is where I stand on the death penalty. And maybe he's hoping that 5-10 years down the line, if one coalition or the other gets the votes, they're referencing back to his quotes.
Yeah, but because he's joined Bob Taft, another Republican former governor, who has said he opposes the death penalty. You know, after we recorded that session, there was breaking news that was 3 weeks in the making. Thanks to reporter Doug Livingston of the Marshall Project, we learned that Governor DeWine recently commuted the sentence of a man on death row, Gregory Lott, who in 1986 murdered an elderly man by setting him on fire during a home burglary. Lott, who is now 64, has serious intellectual disabilities, and some courts have said that people in his position should not be executed. They've kind of gone back and forth on the issue, but it's a serious issue whether someone with serious intellectual disabilities should be executed. The Ohio Parole Board had recommended clemency some time ago, and on May 27th of this year, DeWine followed through and commuted his sentence to life without parole. Mike DeWine never publicized that decision, and he has yet to fully explain it. We'll be right back.
Each story you hear on Planet Money starts with a question. What happens if we refund tariffs? Why are groceries so expensive? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious, because the forces shaping our world can be hard to see. Follow NPR's Planet Money wherever you get your podcasts and start seeing how the economy really works.
Welcome back to Snollygoster. A favor to ask, if you like this podcast, please give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, share this episode. Share word of this program. Post it on social media. Post it on Reddit. Help us get the word out. You are our best marketing tool. And thanks. Okay, back to the Columbus on the Record panel. This week, it's Ohio Public Radio reporter Sarah Donaldson, Republican strategist Terry Casey, and OSU political scientist Herb Asher.
The candidates for governor continue to travel the state, raising money and building grassroots support. This is still fairly new for Republican Vivek Ramaswamy and Democrat Amy Acton. They've never held elected office before. The most recent public poll done by Fox News shows the race basically tied, with Acton holding a slim one-point lead over Ramaswamy. That certainly falls within the margin of error. Acton claims she is raising more money than her opponent, but Ramaswamy has much more money in the bank because the billionaire is contributing to his own campaign. Herb Asher, I mean, we're 4.5 months away. Not that long. Do we really know how this campaign is going to shake out?
No, but I think what we can say is what's happened the last 6 months. 6 months ago, the prevailing conventional wisdom was Vivek Ramaswamy was the strong favorite, and Amy was a very much an underdog. And he was strongly favored because Ohio's a red state, and he had a little bit more name recognition than she had. And it seemed like he had much greater access to money, not just personal wealth, but the ability to raise money. So he was considered the strong favorite. Today, as the poll shows, a lot of people are saying it's very, very close. And so what's happened in the last 6 months? And there's a number of things that have happened. One, at the national level, the whole atmosphere and context for Republicans has become more sour. It's a midterm election after the election of a Republican president. So there's that that's going on. The economy, inflation, an unpopular war, that's all there. But Vivek Ramaswamy has also demonstrated he's made a number of unforced errors. He really, when he made the comments about the property tax, that was, you know, again, he backed off of that. Then he made comments about the income tax, and then he made comments about our children and how and our culture. I mean, so he really has been sort of out of touch in terms of understanding the implications of his comments.
Sorry, can he overcome that? Why isn't he have a more of a lead at this point, well, given how we are a red state?
Part of it, even though us junkies at the table and most of the people watching, most real people are busy with graduations and weddings and vacations, and they haven't focused on the race. So the reality, you still have two people running for governor that are pretty much unknown and don't have the public records as most other candidates for governor have in the past. So it's a long ways to go. The key thing is watch the generic ballot. Right now, the generic ballot's about in Ohio is about plus 6% Republican. Watch how that goes and flows, because as Herb correctly noted, part of the drag for Republicans has been at the national level and Trump. We'll see where gas prices, the economy goes, but it's still a long ways to go. And a lot of people, wisely and correctly, don't really start paying attention until October, yeah, when they kind of know it's close and I got to make a decision.
So if you watch Ramaswamy's ads, Mamie Acton's not really on TV on ads right now, but all of his ads are kind of introductory ads. His wife is on one. They've got a police officer supporting him. They've got, you know, a victim of human trafficking supporting him and what he's going to do there. Pretty bland, but also introductory.
Well, but in the least, it shows that he's buying ads and airing them during Cincinnati Reds games on the weekends, because I was watching the Reds with my husband, and there was a Vivek Ramaswamy ad, and then there was another one. And it is, like Terry pointed out, early. I mean, you know, the primaries weren't that long ago. So, I mean, I think it at least shows that Ramaswamy knows it's going to be a campaign. He's got a campaign for this. But I'm always hesitant to go off polls because they are a snapshot in time. And a lot of polls in the last couple of election cycles in Ohio have shown Democrats doing better than they ultimately do. Republicans have had several slam dunk statewide elections that were potentially going to be close if the polls were right.
Does this stay close to the end, Herb, do you think?
It depends on what happens in the national setting. And it depends on also the Amy Acton campaign. Besides these Vivek Ramaswamy commercials that are introducing himself, there are also a lot of other commercials I've seen on regular broadcast TV and cable that are just slashing Amy Acton. They're just going after her. And so one of the questions, if Amy has money, is when does she go on TV? And when does she do the introduction? But also, when does she go after Vivek Ramaswamy? And again, this is an historical example, but back when Michael Dukakis won the Democratic nomination, he was far ahead of George Bush.
10 points in August,
ahead. Yeah, and then the Bush campaign and independent groups went on with a whole slew of negative, vicious commercials. And by Labor Day, Dukakis never responded. He said, well, American people won't buy that nonsense. That won't affect them. And he was so wrong. When he went on TV, it was too late.
We are just seeing the start of the television ad wars. We've seen a lot of them already, but it's really just the start. Thanks to our panel this week, Ohio Public Radio reporter Sarah Donaldson, Republican strategist Terry Casey, and OSU political scientist Herb Asher. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past week. This week, we give it to Governor DeWine for quietly commuting the death sentence of Gregory Lott. We talked about it earlier. It appears he had very valid reasons for this commutation. Nothing shrewd about that, really. What is Snollygoster-like is that he did not let the public know about it. He commuted the sentence on May 27th, 3 weeks before his announcement that he now opposes capital punishment. Now, the governor's office sends out at least one press release per day. A steady stream of communication flows from the governor's office into reporters' email inboxes. Usually his office is touting a groundbreaking or ribbon cutting he has or he will attend. He announces some science of reading success, appointments to little-known boards and commissions. He does generate a lot of press material, and he does make big announcements in these press releases. Not this time. No press release. He commuted the sentence of a man who committed a horrific crime, and we didn't hear a word of it from the governor's office. The governor did not mention it at his news conference. He was even asked about his thoughts on commuting a death sentence. Not a peep about how he had just done that. We don't know why he kept it a secret. but it was pretty shrewd to do so. For that, Governor DeWine gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. For our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.